provisions, you've kept us, Lord, financially.
Yes.
And say through this, Lord, let it not be me, let it be you. Help me, God, through this. So, chapter 5 deals with sort of Moses obeying God, bringing with, you know, Moses and Aaron, going in, and after God has spoken to Moses and saying, look, you're going to go, you're going to speak to Pharaoh, and he even told him that he would deny, that, you know, he would say, ah, not a good idea, you know, it was unless it was compulsion that Pharaoh was going to make a move. But he even said, you're going to get neglected. And it's important, like, just before this was chapter 4, and just to kind of rehash here, chapter 4, verses 29, it's important to note, it says, then Moses and Aaron went and assembled all the elders of the sons of Israel, and Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses. He then performed the signs in the sight of the people. So the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord was concerned about the sons of Israel, and that he had seen their affliction, then they bowed down and worshipped. And I only bring back a previous verse because you're going to see a reaction here of what happens, the mentality that changes, and the test that's put even on the people of Israel here, also Moses, but their change, their heart is just like all over the place. So, you know, it kind of ends with us bowing down, worshiping, saying. And you got to remember, Moses revealed everything. He had to have, in context of what, you know, is said here. You know, he says he would tell. He told them, spoke the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses. So, what did God speak to Moses about? Well, he had spoken to Moses that he would go before Pharaoh, and there was an awareness that Pharaoh would say no, unless by compulsion. But there was going to be a moment of no. So they were aware of this when this happened. So they were being told, even if they worshiped, they were aware that there was going to be a denial that was coming. They don't know the full, obviously, many things that God puts us through in certain tests and so forth, and the way that he works are never the way that we always assume it to be. We can always, sometimes, again, like I always say, I always like, what's God going to do this week or this month? What's he up to? You start to see things happening in your life, and you go, all right, I know, God, what you're going to be doing next. And it never ends up being what you always think it's going to be, which is pretty crazy when you think about it, because it's like so many times we try to predict God's movements.
Yeah.
And it comes out a whole different way, even a way that we're going to see, which is like an ultimate test, because it looks like the opposite of what he declared. It's important to note that the elders of Israel, they were, God said, I'm aware of your afflictions, I'm going to take you out of this land, you're going to worship before the mountain.
Yeah.
We're going out. Okay, they know that was coming. But they also knew that there would be begrudging, so to speak, a denial, unless by compulsion, by Pharaoh. So they were aware of this, but they worship God at this moment. Watch how their hearts change through this. One of the things that God kind of brought me to before we start here was, and he's been reading, I've been hearing this, kind of like brings me through this as I was reading this, reminded me. Peter 4, 12, 13, you don't have to go to it, you just take a note. 1 Peter, I believe, 4, 12 to 13. It says, beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, and through some strange thing happening unto you. That's a verse we should have up on our walls. But rejoice in as much as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye shall be glad also with exceeding joy. Okay, and again, I'm not trying to make this, you know, jump into the New Testament here, but the word in Greek for fury trial is perwisage, can I say it right? And it means a burning in which metals are roasted and reduced, a figure drawn from the refiner's fire, and a calamity or trial that tests our character. We are going to be allowed calamities, as you're going to see here. It'll be a roasting. It'll be a reduction of us. So that a beautiful figure is kind of pulled from the fire, a figure of grace. Again, you got to remember that throughout this, and this is the God that does not change. The Lord God does not change. Your life is going to be a series of tests like this. It's going to test your character. It's going to test your loyalty. It's going to test your faith. It's going to test your love for God. Again, and through our lives, we're going to have pharaohs that are going to be kicking us around and kicking us down and blaming us for the problems that have occurred. I think there's a lot of infighting in the church and so forth, and a lot of it's, you know, there's so much of it, it's going to be like this kind of like friction that's caused by these fury trials that come upon us. And they're never easy, and they never change. I always say, do you see any patriarchs in the Bible that don't go through fury trials? Not many, if any. They go through fury trials, and so will we. And it's funny, because as I felt this from God, you know, we're so lazy sometimes as Christians. We can barely do what God's trying to tell us to do and building us up in faith. How are we going to handle a fury trial? Here we are just like, go and talk to this person. Oh, it's too much. I can't do it. What about a fury trial where if you were to come up to somebody and they were to punch you in the head, you know, for trying to witness to them? So anyway, let's read chapter 5:1. And afterward, Moses and Aaron came and said to Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go that they may celebrate a feast to me in the wilderness." So, this is nothing new to stand before Pharaoh and hear a kind of request like this. There would be in the land, in Pharaoh's land, there would be many different types of people that would worship different idols, and some of them would try to do, even as Muslims do today, like pilgrimages and so forth. It was common for him to hear some kind of request. It was not a big request in what it is. You know, and it's also to understand the Israelites were actually allowed to sacrifice and worship the pagan Egyptian gods where they were. They were not, you know, being held back from that. But here they're mentioning Aaron saying, "The Lord, the God of Israel." This is the God of the Hebrews, and Pharaoh knows this. He knows that it is, but he claims in verse 2, it says, "But Pharaoh said, 'Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord. Besides, I will not let Israel go.'" You know, it's funny. I don't know what it was that kind of struck me on that. Just blunt honesty. I'm not saying I'm, you know, giving the Pharaoh any credit here, but how many Christians do you know, that are like, you know, "Oh, I know the Lord," and they're not really serving him. And here you have this Pharaoh's like, "I don't know the Lord. Why should I serve him?" You know, and again, you're already talking about a little bit of paranoia here in the sense that he's not a fan of the growth of the prosperity and the growth of the numbers that are involved with God's people. It doesn't give him an excuse. This is the Lord, the God of the created universe. And every god that he's worshiping, including himself, pharaohs were considered to be gods themselves. You know, this is the God of the universe here that he's sort of dissing. Verse 3, it says, "Then they said, 'The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Otherwise, he will fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword.'" This is a reality. Now, specifically, we don't know the conversation fully that God spoke to, Moses. But there is a reality of understanding here that to worship, it's kind of a reminder and a thankfulness. I kind of thought about this as just of the cross, because Think you gotta be. You gotta really start thinking about it when you go before God and you go through worship and you're doing what God tells you to do. These are the realities of what God demands, and the consequences of that here in the Old Testament here are pretty strong. You know, so many times we just go through our lives and we're just like, well, I don't know, God, maybe I'll do that, but not that. You know what I mean? Or I won't go that far. And think about the grace upon grace as we do these stupid things where we don't do what God wants us to. We don't worship in the Spirit. I mean, that's, and yet there's this grace. And again, I go back to John 1:17. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. And that's something we got. We shouldn't take for granted. So I mean, yeah, I mean, serious reality there. The wages of sin is death. And that, sin is disobedience, it's missing the mark. Whether that's not worshiping in the Spirit. So that's how holy our God is. Not God's a bad guy. He's so good and he's so holy.
Yep.
We have no clue. We really don't. Compared to know the fullness. And yet, it's funny. We're given all this grace. We're given all this freedom. We have the ability through the Holy Spirit to do this. But yet, we still sit in our jail cells. Yep. And the door's unlocked.
Yep.
The jail cell's open. We have the atonement of Christ. We can sometimes we look through, you know, people that are just like looking through the bars of the jail and seeing all these other Christians that are walking free and truly surrender to Christ and get jealous and all this. And I felt God gave me that image, like there's so many Christians like in a jail looking out through the jail bars, but they're free. They're allowed to walk out. They're allowed to leave. They can be free. They can go out. And they get jealous against Christians that they see that are actually walking with Christ. And the fullness of joy through trials, yeah, but the, just seeing that image that kind of came to my mind as I kind of do this. Exodus 5:4, but the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you draw the people away from their work? Get back to your labors. Pharaoh is addressing the Israelites not as Israelites, but as the people of the land, quote unquote. What's interesting, and the reason why he's doing that, because the people of the land, Pharaoh considers all of the land, including the people in it, his property. So when he says people of the land, this is really, he's kind of like addressing it as, this is my property, you're mine. And you notice something that, again, is very, to me, it's very demonic in nature. Where is he putting the blame in all this? He's putting the blame right on these guys. He's not saying, you know, he's saying, what are you doing? You, Moses, Aaron, you're causing the trouble here. And this is going to create a strife between Moses and the elders and Aaron. He's putting the blame again on the obedient people of God. Calling out Moses and Aaron, giving them a blame so that the elders will go, well, see, problem here. These people have overstepped their bound, not listening to God. To Pharaoh, it's like, you're just making this request so you can have 3-day vacation, so to speak. So he's, you know, he's looking at it as like laziness. Verse 5, it says, again, Pharaoh said, again, notice he's saying it again, the accuser here, look, the people of the land are now many, and you, blaming them again, you would have them cease from their labors. It's all your fault. Again, you see a repeat. The enemy repeats a lot. A lot of accusations making you doubt God, making you go, what are you doing? This is way off. This is my plan. This is the world's plan and then God's plan. And constantly told, this is not going to bode well for you. 6 day, it says, so the same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters over the people and their foremen, saying, you are no longer to give the people straw to make brick as previously. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. But the quota of bricks which they were having previously, you shall impose on them. You are not to reduce any of it, because they are lazy. Therefore they cry out, let us go and sacrifice to our God. So it's important to stand here. You've got the Egyptian taskmasters, which are Egyptians, you know, bosses. And then they have these foremen, which are Hebrew. They're Israelites. They're foremen, and foremen are like the head of the construction, so to speak. So you got a bunch of these sort of leaders that are Israelites. And then they go, the taskmasters, the Egyptian taskmasters are like barking at the foremen. The foremen are basically telling the Israelites what to do as the workers in charge of the whole operation. So instead of an easy out, things get harder, there's more work, and it's like impossible. It's impossible work. And so, how many times have you had that sort of test yourself where you're obedient to God, something happens, and you're like, wait, this is just crazy. Is this ever going to end? I mean, there's no way this can. And sometimes we got to really, when we see the impossible stand before us, where we cannot take it anymore, we can't take this, we can't deal with this, we got to like just let go and say this, you know, God, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to, I know this, you know, there's a part of it too that's, so many times I was reminded it throughout this that the sufferings are never infinite. There's a finite. It comes to an end. Something that seems impossible will eventually be done with, but it'll be a trial. So again, you got this harder, impossible reality. You're like, we can't do this. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Verse 9, it says, let the labor be heavier on the men and let them work at it so that they may pay no attention to false words. Again, always the old saying, the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. The enemy wants you to labor for your life, throughout your life. He wants your labor to be he wants you to be succumbed into labor. And no attention given to God. No attention to any words. He wants you to doubt those words and say, oh, they're false words.
Yeah.
And then eventually you're so exhausted you can't even recognize anymore what you were supposed to do for God. And that's, you know, we all have to work, but we have to put work. God knows, you know, so many times that there's a time to put away work. Sometimes I remember working on jobs, like I just did a really, you know, heavy freelance gig and I wanted to look good for the studio and work hard. But I felt God like, you know, you're neglecting prayer, you're neglecting worship, you know, you got another day to do it. And sure enough, there was no rush, even though there sounded like a rush. You know what I mean? Exodus 5:10-13. So the taskmaster of the people and their foreman went out and spoke to the people saying, thus says Pharaoh, I am not going to give you any straw. You go and get straw for yourself wherever you can find it, but none of your labor will be reduced. So the people scattered through all the land of Egypt to gather stubble for straw. The taskmasters pressed them, saying, complete your work quota, your daily amount, just as when you had straw. So you got these taskmasters, again, bossing around these foremen, the foremen bossing around the workers. There's all this strife going on, and this actually in the original Hebrew, the original Hebrew, the thus saith Pharaoh. This is actually a kind of like, you know, all the, so far it's been thus saith the Lord, verse 1. This actually implies almost sarcasm, like thus saith Pharaoh. You know, it's implying like sort of like a, hey, I'm saying it now, I'm God. So it's a knock at God, thus saith Pharaoh. So you know, straw wasn't just down by the river, over by the forest next to where they were working. They had to go over the land, and they would have to go where it was actually cut up. The straw was cut up. And they have to find, like, the scraps, so to speak. Yeah. So they're, like, running around looking for scraps. So it's not just sitting in one place working. It's literally getting and running and going back and forth and trying to make the same quota. It's an insult to injury. It's like a scavenger, a terrible scavenger hunt with no time. again, obviously this is not going to go on forever. When we see these things in life where it's like, how are we going to deal with this? We need to wait on God. We need to say, okay, slow down. You know, don't get angry, God, as you're going to see the Israelites get. They're about to, you know, they go from worshiping God, being told he's going to deny them, being told that God was going to deliver from them from the affliction. But this is where we talked about how God is, you cannot guess God on what he's going to do in the trials that he puts you through, and the way in which he gets his will done through your life. So now, instead of, now you've got more affliction. So here is God saying, I'm going to deliver you from affliction. Here's more affliction.
Yeah.
Again, it's like the Lord saying, you know, I'm going to deliver you from this. But you're going to, and I mean, imagine if, you know, different things in your life. I'm going to deliver you from this, but it's going to involve sickness. You might lose your house. You might be forced to unjust labor. These are things that can happen and have happened to the church. And we got it so easy in the American church, let me tell you. And again, where in the Bible do you see patriarchs not going through these things? Where you're just like, it seems like the opposite of what God promised. It's almost like a 180 of what God promised. That's the test. The test can come in a 180. Well, you were promised by God, looks like it's going the completely opposite direction, but actually God is moving and he's working. And it's a test.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's good.
That's good. Throughout the Bible, in the midst of these trials and so forth, there's reprieves, there's pauses, there's deliverances from the affliction, but it doesn't go on forever. Although persecution and affliction come and go, God delivers us from those. I hope I don't sound like the affliction guy constantly talking about affliction, but
no,
it just seems
ahead.
Like...
It's okay. Keep afflicting.
Yeah. Verse 14, moreover, the foremen of the sons of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, why have you not completed your required amount, either yesterday or today, in making brick as previously? So these are, again, our Israelite foremen, being beaten, the bosses, they're getting the blame. Then the foreman of the sons of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh, saying, why do you deal this way with your servants? And it says, sorry about that. And there is no straw given to our servants, verse 16. Yet they keep saying to us, make bricks, and behold, your servants are being beaten. But it is the fault of your own people. There's the blame game again. Whose fault is this? Well, it's Moses and Aaron, obviously. But he said, you are lazy, very lazy. Therefore you say, let us go and sacrifice the Lord. I'm sorry, that previous verse was wrong. When he says, fault of your own people, that's actually the way off. Fault of your own people. When he says, your own people, he's talking about the Egyptians. So he's saying, you know, your Egyptians are doing this. Here's where Pharaoh again puts the blame game again back on Aaron. So, but he said, you are lazy, very lazy, therefore you say, let us go and sacrifice the Lord. Who said, let us go and sacrifice the Lord? It was Moses and Aaron. So go now and work, for you will be given no straw, yet you must deliver the quota of bricks. The foreman of the sons of Israel saw that they were in trouble because they were told, you must now reduce your daily amount. You must not reduce your daily amount of bricks. Again, Pharaoh's shifting the blame to Moses and Aaron. And then, of course, the foreman, you know, why are you doing this? Well, because your Aaron and Moses said, let us go and sacrifice the Lord. Again, here you see the accuser creating strife, again, in the midst of hard times. This technique continues today by the enemy, constantly creating friction. Verse 20:21, it says, when they left Pharaoh's presence, they met Moses and Aaron as they were waiting for them. They said to them, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you made us odious in Pharaoh's sight, and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us. So there is, again, a test failed. It says, how often does a Christian do this? He sees a situation and goes to the pastor under the bad circumstance and like barks at the pastor and blames them. You know, going after the church leaders that are just following God and directing the servant, you know, these people of God what to do. And what's really crazy is throughout this, the Israelites are praying, oh God, judge the Pharaoh and so forth. And yet here, they're calling out to judgment onto God's people. Again, this strife, it's like, you know, judge God's people, judge that person. And, you know, it's just crazy when you think about it. People are asking God, instead of judge the Egyptians, instead they switch to God, judge God's people here. They're actually obeying him. And in regards to this kind of odious smell, it's not referring to a physical smell, but it's just like their eyes and Pharaoh, you know, they're all worried about the, you know, how they look in regards to the world itself, how, you know, their position and so forth, and how, you know, just keep, you know, in the midst of just trying to obey, being under this sort of like slavery, you know, just trying to obey the world and its ways, you know.
Yeah,
just is like, whatever, just keep quiet, stay, you know, just work the job, don't do anything, you know. And it kind of reminded me of where we're at, how we don't, and I felt this from God, he so much wants us to, like, break out, and we keep half-stepping it, you know. We kept saying, I'll do this, but not this, and God's just saying, no, I want everything, just let go. We're also afraid to embarrass ourselves, which has got to end.
Sure.
And I really think God's bringing a season that's really going to be, it's really going to push us over that edge, because we need to be pushed over that edge, I think. I know it sounds crazy, but we can't kind of stay in that position, you know, that sort of rigid position. Again, all worried about how our eyes look in the midst of the world. How do we look, you know? There's no confidence in God. The thing to notice throughout all this is these guys, they did know. They did know that the Pharaoh was going to say no, because Moses and Aaron told them, and they still worship God. They knew, but they said he will not, you know, he's not going to do it unless there's compulsion. And their compulsion ain't there yet, when he has to be forced to let them go. So there was a reality of understanding that they knew that he would say no, but they don't like the hard labor. They don't like the pressure. They don't like the hardships. They don't like the sort of like you could say the wine press, so to speak. You know. So they just like complain and whine. Who do they whine to? Well, they'll whine to the leaders. You know, in peace and in prosperity and in good times, and you know, the church can be quiet, but when things get rough, that's when it's like they start complaining. And the true heart, what's going on here? God is incomprehensible in the sense that you're never really going to know how this is all going to pan out, but expect anything. And don't expect to expect anything, but don't expect to know what he's going to do, you know. Don't assume the way in which it's all going to play out. I've seen so many times where I've never thought it would play out in that. I've never thought it would turn out in that way. You'll be able to understand why God did it. You'll see the fruit of why God did it to you, but you would have never saw it. We could always look back and see what God did in the past, but as far as looking forward, we really can't make a prediction. You know what I mean? As far as how it's going to pan out. Heaviness. Understanding that we really can't predict. We don't I'm trying to predict them all the time, and I just think I just keep failing. I'm like, okay, what's coming next? And I don't want to be like, I remember Pastor Mike always says, you know, like, you know, the Lord, your will be done, and go like this. You know what I mean? It's never really kind of like that. When bad goes to worse, that's when God makes a great move of deliverance. When it seems like it's going in the opposite direction, yet we're being obedient, that's when there will be deliverance. It won't be easy. We see the worst replace the... Instead, we, you know, when you see the... when we see the worse replace the bad, so when it goes from bad to worse, that's when we're always saying, like, oh, nothing's happening here. But actually, something is happening. So whenever I see family members or something happening that's traumatic in somebody's life, and is, you know, and they're being tested, I go, oh, okay, something's going on here. God's at work. You know, it's not always just judgment on somebody for what they've done. It's like, you know, God dealing. Trying to unharden hearts. We'll end this with 22:23. Then Moses returned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why have you brought harm to this people? Why did you ever send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done harm to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all.
Wow.
You know, it's okay to go before God and say, you know, why? Why did this happen? Because you promised deliverance. God did promise deliverance. But he didn't think like, okay, we're going to, you know, see the affliction. Now here's more affliction.
Yes.
But at the same time, Moses still knew the story's not over yet. This is going to be through force. God's going to have to bring a point where through compulsion they're going to be let go. It hasn't happened yet. So God does tell us these things. Just, okay, hold on. You know, you can go to God and say, we'll be doing a lot of whys in our life, but are we always going to get an answer? No. But I think God will always still, in his mercy, will tell us, hey, hold on a minute, here. You know, when you're, like, stressed to this point, God will still be there to give you some insight on what's happening. But still, in the midst of it, it's a test.
That's good.
You know, when you kind of think about this chapter, what if God made it easy? He went before Pharaoh and, yeah, all right, bye. You know, and that was it. He just left. Think about the so many steps by faith. You know, without faith, no one can please him. God's looking for faith throughout all of this, throughout all this test. It's faith. Yep. It's faith. It's faith. The faith is not tested without fire.
Yep. Yep.
Without fire, you don't have faith. So we got to get used to the fire because that's how faith is birthed. Why do we run from fire? Why do we want to stay in mediocrity? You know?
Yes.
Can we just accept the fire, you know?
That's right.
We say, all right, I know fire's coming.
That's good, man. That's really good. You covered that.
Again, God's ways are always going to be incomprehensible to us. But in regardless, they are meant, they're definitely meant for good. As we're going to see in the later chapters, that's going to happen.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all I have. Hey, Pastor Mike, anything to say?
No, it's excellent. You stuck to my sermon a little bit for the week, but that's okay.
There's always a million things I miss.
Excellent. Just wanted to wish everybody watching us Merry Christmas. I pray if you're with family or whatever you're doing. You know, Jesus really is the reason for the season. So I didn't mean to step in this, but just wanted to, because I know it's tomorrow's Christmas Eve. And one of the most magical Christmases I ever spent was the first year that I came to Jesus. And I grew up, you know, it was always about gifts and presents and for the first year, I was excited and content on Christmas. It was a new thing for me. But I just want to wish you a Merry Christmas, everyone. Barbara, John, love you guys. Anybody else watching us, you have a good Christmas. I pray it's good. And just wanted to say hi. And but on the money, if we got things handed to us easy, we wouldn't grow in faith at all. nor would we value it. And I wanted to say one thing, you didn't miss it, but just something that hit my spirit when you were speaking. And I know the Spirit of the Lord was moving you to say what you were preaching, it was around the money too, is when God's progressing you in a way that he has guided you, and you have a confidence, you have to understand something. Sometimes the people going in the rightest way get the hardest hits. I've taken little steps, little things that might not seem to mean a lot, and I've seen so many adversity break forth. And, you know, in your younger, you kind of go, oh, did I miss it? You know, is this God at all? Because we have a mentality, you know, if it's God, it's easy. And I don't know why we do that. So I'm so glad you brought it. But sometimes we take steps just like Moses, and then he goes back and blames God, you know. Why'd you do this? You know, they're not listening. Fire will hit. Think about this one thing. I'm going to let our brother finish by praying. Do you really think if you're growing in your faith, do you actually think the enemy, the devil, is going to really just encourage you or allow you to make the move free of hassle? I'm just saying, guys. And it's not even sometimes the channels he uses as much as just remember who's really trying to pull the strings and be encouraged. Be encouraged. Sometimes we take steps we need to and we'll get resistance, but hold tight. Everybody watching over camera, hold tight. Sometimes the best moves are met with the fiercest adversity. That's okay. That's okay. That's why Jesus gives us peace that doesn't depend on my circumstances. So, anyway. Awesome message, man. Thank you so much for what you brought. Excellent.
I guess we'll pray here. Father God, we just thank you for today. Well, let us be open. We got a hurting world out there, Lord. How ignorant are we, Lord, not to reach out to it, God? There's an entire world, billions compared to when you walk the earth. You're here with us now, Lord. And yet we walk past them daily. We just pray that you would open up doors. Lord, you keep saying to me over and over again, people are not an inconvenience.
Yeah.
We may be busy, we got bills to pay, but in the end, what have we done for the kingdom, God? So I pray we could reach out to the people, but not just speak in just, you know, scripted terms, Lord, but we ask, what do you have to say to people, God? And the stuff you've shown me through, it's just speaking, again, the burden of the word of the Lord, not soothsaying here, to what you have to say to people, God. We just pray that everybody here, Lord, speaks prophetically and speaks to your heart, to everyone around us, God. Help us to make a difference and a dent, and let us continue to have joy in the midst of the time of trials, God. In Jesus' name.
Awesome, but excellent.